Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story?
Hello, Weirdsville. Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. Happy 2025. This is our first episode in the new year, and we're super pumped. I am one of your hosts, Barry Johnston. With me, as always, my co-host, my compadre, the professor, Mr. Adam Beebe. How are you, sir?
I am doing well. Thank you very much, oh smiling sensei.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, my friend. So far, so good. We just got here in the greater Cincinnati area about 6, maybe 7 inches of snow.
Wow.
So I am just chilling at home with my kitty cats and looking at the beautiful snow outside, and it'll be beautiful for probably another day, and then I'll probably be like, all right, let's get back out and get to work and, you know,
wonderful,
be part of the world, I suppose.
We're going to be getting some of your weather here in the next few days, man. We've got, we got a big snowstorm coming. And I mean, I say big, it's 1 to 3 inches, laughable. Yeah. But no, the roads will be an absolute terror. People don't know how to drive on snow down here, man. So, anytime it gets even rainy out, man, people drive like idiots, you know?
I think that's just been a trend that has developed over the past, you know, 25 years. But now I'm starting to sound like grumpy old man you.
Well, speaking of which, I've got a grumpy old man rant session here, man. This has been one of the most frustrating mornings I've had in quite a while. And I bought a washing machine back in July, okay, one of the big carriers of appliances, okay, and so now it's all electronic, right? And so you put the lid down, you hit the wash mode, and it locks, the door locks, right? Well, the door won't lock, okay? Now, these new washing machines and dryers are equipped with a smart app that you can diagnose problems with, right? So I spend like 2 hours trying to register the unit, take pictures of the unit, upload the information to the app so that they can troubleshoot it, right? Apparently, there's some weird thing with the model that I got where you've got to go through all these extra steps to connect your phone to the washing machine. Okay.
Oh, jeez.
So
just that statement of you've got to connect your phone to the washing machine.
Yeah, dude.
It's just something that makes no sense.
Oh.
But carry on.
Tell me about it, man, right? So anywhere I go online and I'm looking for door won't lock LG top loading washer, it sends you information to the app, or it sends you to people that are videoing themselves online taking the washer apart in order to, like, I'm like, I'm not doing that. I'm not going to void the warranties, right?
Oh my God, dude. Yeah.
So I end up, and of course, everything's done AI right now. So, like, I go. I want to request a claim, okay? And that sends me to their chat bots.
Yeah.
And I keep saying, all I want is a phone number to call a person. Okay. That's all I want. Okay.
Oh, dude.
Oh my God. Then they give me the number, right? They give me the number. I call. I can't get a real person. I finally figured out one of the numbers I stumbled upon. I called it. Okay. Guy answers. I'm talking to him for like 5 minutes, telling him the situation. And then he goes, oh, well, I'll get you to LG then. I said, wait a minute. You're not LG? He goes, No, we're LG, but we're in the extended warranty department. We don't handle the regular warranty departments, man. So this is like 3 hours of me, man. Like, just trying to figure out how I can call somebody. I finally get somebody on the phone, okay, and we make the appointment. And then she sends me she tells me it's going to be on the 8th. And then she sends me the appointment thing through their text messaging. It says it's for the 28th. The 28th for like 2 weeks, man. 3 weeks. And I call her back. I'm like, hey, you just set the appointment up. You sent it. It's on the 28th. She goes, oh, no, I'm sorry. It's a problem in our system. So 3 hours, man. 3 hours just to get somebody to come look at my damn freaking washing machine, man. I'm sorry, but like, as a consumer, I just paid good money for this thing.
Yeah.
A lot
of good money. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I go to the store that I bought it from. Of course, they say, well, it's out of our hands. It's in the manufacturer's hands, you know, but it's just like nowhere on the website. There's no contact phone number. You know what I mean? Yep.
Dude, I had a very similar experience with my phone around the holidays when I lost a phone on the airplane.
I remember that. Yeah.
Trying to, I think like everything has to be done on the website, you know. But I can't call and check on anything. I can't call to see did I fill this out right because I haven't received an email or anything back from you guys.
Right.
You know, so now that very slim window of me knowing exactly when and where I lost this plane it was on the last time I had it.
Yes.
Now that window of opportunity for me to get my phone back is just blown.
Yeah.
So there's really no point in it.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be a thing. I should have there should be a customer number that you can call and still talk to people. And, you know, this is what happened whenever people started complaining about all the call centers and all the call centers then being moved overseas.
Yeah.
This is what happened. We all complained about call centers and talking to people and having to talk to people and wait. Now we can't even fucking do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. 2025 aged me immediately.
Oh, yeah.
We're barely a week into it now.
For sure, man. Yo. Technology is supposed to make life easier, you know? And then it's just, if you have a problem, God bless you. Because you're going to be given, you're going to be fishing for hours. But anyway, so anyway, rant over. I'm sorry for that, but I was just so irritated. It was
I feel you. I'm sure everybody out there has had a similar experience.
Absolutely. We're getting ready to talk about a crazy experience.
Oh yeah. This is completely different. This is one of the first. This is one of two parts so far with our guest, Olivia James. We're probably going to have her back because we really enjoyed talking to her. And we know that a lot of people are going to have questions. And so if you got questions over the next two episodes, write them down and email them to us so we can compile them and get them ready. But I will say that, you know, this is the one of the most just incredible stories we've heard. It's jaw-dropping. It's mind-blowing. And it's just, it's fascinating, and it is a big one because, you know, we barely got to age 7, but through most of this. So, Barry, do you have any other thing to say?
No, just that? We're about to go and talk about a rabbit hole that's come across us a couple of times, but this, we go deeper. We go deeper.
Yeah, we're going deep. We're going MK Ultra. We're going secret space programs. We're going Monarch projects. We're going all in, and so much more. And this is one of the just it's a wild ride. We really love talking to Olivia and hearing her story. As you'll note, because we barely say a thing.
Those are the good ones.
Those are the good ones for sure. So, all right, thank you, Olivia, for joining us. What's your weird story?
Hi, so my name is Olivia James, and my weird story involves MKUltra, Monarch programming, and the Secret Space Program.
Okay, awesome, awesome.
Okay, all right, we're in.
Okay, you want me to start?
Let's do
Ready
it.
To go?
Let's do
yeah,
it.
Okay, so I always start off by talking about my parents, because it goes all the way back, and that's really the origin of how I got involved in all this.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So I always say that I had very interesting parents as a child. My father was recruited very young from a very small town into military intelligence. At about 18 years old, he was stationed in the Russian-German border.
Wow.
And he learned German in about 6 months.
Wow.
And he was doing code breaking and, you know, different things like that.
Wow.
So I thought that was really interesting. And when he got out of the army, he was doing some very nefarious things. He got involved with some drug traffickers. And what I call it cartels, but in the 60s and early 70s, they really didn't use the word cartels.
Right.
So I just describe it that way because that's the word we all know now. And if right. anybody ever wanted to do any research about the government or shadow government's involvement and some of the three-letter agencies' involvement into drug trafficking in those times, super easy to find. So it's not out of the ordinary to hear these kinds of things. So anyways, sure. my father was involved in that. He started working with the cartels, and he was a major drug trafficker. They were making a lot of money at a very young age, early 19, 20 years old, him and my mother both. And she was the launderer. She was kind of like his partner. They were both very young doing that. I was just a baby when this was going on.
Okay.
So what he was doing is he was smuggling large amounts of heroin across the border using a bus. He was a pilot. He knew how to fly a plane, car, and they also used boat too. And I think they said the major way they were doing it is by car. But my mom did a lot of work going back and forth across the border by bus, and she never got caught. And they thought they were pretty smooth. You know, we've never been caught. You know, it's just because they didn't want to say that, you know, they had other involvement and protection from other agencies that were allowing them to get across. It wasn't,
okay.
They weren't that smart to where, you know, so, they could just get back and forth, in my opinion.
So this was right. through the government, basically. Is that what you're saying?
It was in collaboration.
Okay.
With
okay. Gotcha.
With the three-letter agencies, yep. if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah,
they
yeah.
were collaborating with that.
Gotcha.
So they were doing amazing. They were doing very well. But what happened is the downfall is that he became addicted to his own product, and he mm-hmm. started to mess up, and he was missing drops and missing meetings. And you can't do that, especially when there's this huge agency involved as well, not just these major cartels, but these huge agencies. And it was a huge program back in the 60s and 70s. So
right.
he was a risk to everyone. So they decided to try to scare him. They were doing some raids of his home. They did one raid, you know, in a way to scare him. That didn't work, you know, obviously because he had a major addiction. He was having a hard time. And so the second raid, because he didn't stop doing it, the second raid, they actually took him and arrested him. And he was looking at a lot of prison time, probably prison for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And there was a big public trial in the small town I'm from. There, you know, it was all in the newspapers and everything in the courts. It was looking like he was going to go to prison. They were taking down some big drug trafficker.
Mm.
But towards the end, it's pretty much they just let him go. And they just said, we had the wrong person. That's not him. And,
wow.
you know, they gave him a government job, a local government job. So that was really interesting that he was
wow.
able to get out of that. But what I discovered is that the reason why he got out of it so easily is because they made an agreement with him that if he were to give something, like make a trade, then they would let him go and have a normal life. And his trade was he allowed them to use me for MKUltra and some of the services they wanted to do in order to stay out of prison because he was a coward. He didn't want to, you know, spend his life in prison.
Wow.
You know, that was my opinion. I felt like he was a bit cowardly and,
yeah.
you know, giving away his children in order to keep himself safe.
Wow. So how old were you at that time?
I was just a baby then.
Okay.
So
wow.
when they really started MKUltra, I was about 7. So
wow.
I was taken to, and My father's no longer alive, but I was taken to a psychiatric hospital on the East Coast that is no longer open. But this psychiatric hospital was huge. It was massive. It was like a self-sustaining place. You know, they had underground tunnels. They had their own food, you know, farms and everything, so they didn't need anything. So it was a perfect environment for them to do secret projects, things like that. And when I got there, since my parents lost everything when they, you know, had got arrested and everything, we ended up growing up really poor. So when I got there, the main programmer, which is really interesting, was a woman. You really don't hear about women too much involved in MKUltra and being like the actual programmers of this. Mm. But it was a woman with white hair, and she always had her hair pinned up really nice. She looked very elegant all the time. And that always made me, you know, look at her a certain way, because I didn't grow up with people like that. I grew up in a really poor neighborhood. That wasn't the type of people I grew up around. So it was really, I had a really weird feeling around her. She just had a different type of aura, but that's maybe was part of her appeal and how she was good as a programmer, is the way, you know, she behaved. And so there was only me and one other boy in that particular unit. This was a very special, specific type project. And there was another little boy named Jacob. That was what I remember his name as. I don't know if that was his real name. Usually they don't let us use real names in the projects. They give you other names just because they're trying to break you down and pull you away from your own identity.
Right.
Wow.
So what they were trying to achieve at this place is something called syncopated dissociation. So they were using systematic abuse, psychological, physical, sexual, torture and abuse in order to, you know, reach this end goal. What they wanted was to see if we were being tortured at the same time, if we could dissociate at the same time, or if we could leave the body at the same time. Mm-hmm. And because we were experiencing this like systematically, I'm talking about, they would change the activity every 15 to 20 minutes, like a school program. So when we were in this place called the playroom, they would come in, you know, either physically, sexually, or emotionally abuse us. And then they would change that activity every 15 minutes. And in between that, we were also working with the main programmer. She would take us into her office and do really deep hypnosis on us. They were using LSD. They were using electric shock therapy as well. So there was so many different ways for them to reach their end goal. So we ended up being actually successful because for some reason, a lot of people don't survive abuse like that. They check out, but for some reason we were able to leave the body. It's almost like leaving your body behind. So your mind is so, and your mind and your spirit is so, you know, so traumatized, you kind of push it out. You push it out. So what they were also trying to do is break down the entire psyche of, you know, two children in order to, you know, almost like so where they can build it back up and create altars and things like that. So they were also creating altars in us. And I actually have 118 altars. So that was
Is that alter ego? Is that what you mean? Alter personality?
Well, they used to call it multiple personality disorder, and now they try to call it dissociative identity disorder. But I don't even know if that term is expansive enough to even cover, you know, the actual reality of what goes on in your mind when something like that happens. I think it's just, that's just one diagnosis, because they don't even know how complex this is. They have no clue, because I experienced it. They don't know.
Yeah. That is the thing with, particularly with that, because it is such a, an unusual thing. You know, it is really the brain is being, trauma breaks the brain, breaks the person so much that the brain creates an alternate identity to take the pain, or to become somewhere, or to go somewhere else mentally, to not be there, to not be the one enduring it, and so that the organism can, you know, it's still survival. Getting affected, but it's ultimate survival.
I think there's something in you that just snaps and you go into survival mode, and that's that's what a lot of the different MKUltra programs were trying to attain is that, you know, how do we push past the trauma? Because they're trying to make soldiers. Yeah. You know, right. if you can, because imagine if somebody that's been a traumatized and abused that much can just still function, you know, at this level. What kind of, you know, to them, that's a huge success. They've made these ultra soldiers because you can survive this. You know, imagine that, you know, I get what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. But. So they ended up considering me and this other child, Jacob, to be prize pupils. That's what they called us. They said very successful, took to the trauma. And after a while, we didn't, because they were doing so much trauma, and they didn't want us to, because they were trying to make soldiers, like I said. So they didn't want us to ask for it. So we stopped asking for anything. We didn't ask for food. We didn't ask for water. We didn't ask to go to the bathroom. We didn't cry when we were harmed. We didn't have any emotional reaction. So it was pretty much to be like they're trying to make an empty shell. So mm-hmm. we didn't have any reaction to what they wanted.
They want the ultimate goal, and even in military, the reason that, you know, when you go in and they cut, everybody gets the same haircut, everybody gets issued the same uniform, and, you know, they don't call you, you know, by your first name. They'll call you, you know, cadet or private or whatever, and then your other name. But the main thing of that is to break everybody down to the same level, to build them up in the way they want them to be a soldier. And what they're doing when they're doing with the MK Ultras, they're really trying to break you down of all humanity. You know, I'm sorry. I don't mean to try to mansplaining it. I'm just trying to audience.
They're trying to break you down.
Break you down and break away all humanity. So because the best, they want soldiers, they wanted assassins, they wanted people to do operations and have no empathy and no sympathy or anything. They just were being, you know, robots. They are breaking people down so they could be programmed to perform tasks that they were instructed to do without questioning the task, without getting distracted, you know, just completely do so that they made that the ultimate soldier, the ultimate whatever, to just complete the mission at hand and not, you know, get involved. Don't let things like other human beings or other people's pain and suffering or anything like that distract you. Just do and go. Even your own pain and suffering. The only thing that is important is to complete the mission. And that help, you know, by shattering the personality, that's, you know, where they can help. They can, you know, attempt to mold certain fragments of that personality into this, you know, agent, robot, you know, controlled being, asset, tool, whatever you want to call it. And that was, you know, and the whole major point of that. And it's frightening up. Quickest, easiest way to say it is it's fucked up. But I mean, it's even a pale, you know, to it.
Yeah. So. And I think that, well, I was going to say that there's so many reasons why I got chosen. And I actually feel, from what my father says, well, my dead father, I still speak to him. He, you know, pretty much said he was involved kind of in the same thing at a young age, because they're not just recruiting little skinny poor kids for intelligence. That's just, you know, people won't believe that kind of thing, but it's real. That's what they really do. It's because of, you know, our particular DNA. We have some type of latent psychic abilities and other, especially an ability for dissociation. I consider it an ability to be able to dissociate and not feel anything. I consider it an ability. So they were also, so the psychiatrist, this woman, she was also doing a lot of hypnosis. And in these hypnotic sessions that she was doing, she was able to find so much information deep within, you know, the psyche of both of us children. So I was going to talk about some of what she found and a reason why they continued and put me in different programs.
Sure.
Yeah. So some of what they found, and I know this to be real, because if I can find this information now, I still work on these things and, you know, do a lot of hypnotic regression and things like that. If I can find the information, I know they would have no problem having found it back then. So they ended up looking at some of my past lives, and they were using these past lives not only to reprogram new altars, but to, you know, considerably use that for some of their actual torture and abuse tactics, you know, to double seal some of this. So I was going to talk about a few of the past lives that I saw that this is why they used me. So there was one past life. It was about, I think about the 1400s, and it was in Italy. So I lived in a very small village, and I considered myself, you know, a helper of in the village, like a woman that would help other people. So what I would be considered then would be like a medium. So they just didn't call it. I was helping. People would come to me and they wanted to talk to, you know, loved ones that have passed away, and they would trade, you know, like vegetables and goods and things like that to get this. And I really thought I was helping people. It was just a really bad time for to be doing this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the Inquisition came through, and there's just one day my husband had died in that life. So these strange men came to my house, and they punched me in the face and, you know, beat me and pretty much dragged me off to a dungeon. And in that place, in that dark dungeon, they did a lot of torture, more torture. You know, they hung me from the wall by my arms and these ropes. So I was hanging straight up from the ceiling, and I actually died from starvation and dehydration instead of like burning or anything like that. I died before they could do anything else. But it was just so, I was so angry at men in that life. I was very, just to be honest, I was very angry. I couldn't believe they came, you know, came to, and did this to not just me, but a lot of different women in the village.
Yeah.
So they saw that anger and that, you know, that was attached to me in that life and that ability too. And they saw that as one thing that could be used in future, you know, as an asset. There was another life that I saw that, it was about 1800s, and I was a male, and it was, I believe it was in America, but I had, in that life, I had been on my own for a long time. My parents died young, and I was just a little kid when they died. So I was almost like a street kid, you know, traveling village to village. And I met somebody on my travels that I felt like was like me, because there was just something inside me and this other man that was completely dark. So what we would be doing is together, as I grew into adulthood, me and this other gentleman, we would travel from village to village, and we would assault women and leave them in, you know, in the fields and things like that. It was just constant. We would do it in every village. And, you know, we didn't think we could get caught because we traveled so much. We would do it and then move on. We would attack and then move on. And it was just something in us. Some people just are born with a darkness in them to do something like that. And I feel like I was one of those people in that life. So there was one village we went to. We had just assaulted a woman and left her, you know, to perish in the fields. And we went to this local pub, and all the villagers there, you know, we were drinking and having a great time, and then somebody found the woman right away, and that was it. And we were the only new people in that village. Mm-hmm. So they knew it was us. We just took off, and we thought we got away. We ended up hiding in a barn. They found us. They locked the barn and set the barn on fire from the outside. And I just remember in that life trying to crawl up to the rafters to get away from the heat. But we definitely got what we deserved in that life.
Wow.
So they saw that. They also saw that me, that I had been a serial killer in a past life. So they held that. They knew that that would be useful, that anger and that rage, and that, you know, lack of empathy would be useful in a particular altar too for future programs. Right. There was one more life where, and this was really strange, it was ancient times. So I'm looking, I don't know if it's Egypt, but it does look like Egypt. There's sand everywhere, and everybody in the city is like just moving. We're just walking and walking and moving sand. And nobody looks at each other. Nobody talks. Nobody speaks. Nobody's eating. Nobody's drinking. Nothing. Just like, and then there's this giant being standing over us, kind of on this, almost on the pyramid. And he just watches. He's like an overseer. And this being is so powerful. It only takes one of him to command, you know, thousands. And what I know is this being, he used his form as a power structure. It wasn't even like he had to present himself like that. That's just, he wanted to show his strength. And they looked like, we called them the dog people, because they looked like what you would think of Anubis would look like. It was a, and they, you could even see their ships hovering over these pyramids. And what they wanted us to do was build something called flash portals. And they wanted these built quickly. So they had us, they pretty much, it's almost like being hypnotized. And so we just constantly moved. So we were real slaves. We just moved and moved. No food, no water, no nothing. And they wanted us to just build these pyramids for them.
Wow.
So I ended up dying like on the stairs, just, you know, starvation, dehydration again. But it's so interesting because that particular life, I saw what it was to be completely controlled and to be empty in a shell and a robot. Like we were talking like an automaton. And so they also saw that, and I knew they thought that would be perfect. That past life is still in her. It's perfect to build up an altar based on something that was so empty in that, just like in that life. Right. And there was another one more life. Is this one has had such an impact on me, and it was ancient times, and I can't even think of I can't even give a time period, because I really don't know, because I didn't go by time when I was that thing. And I remember I'm just walking in the desert, and there was another, it looked like he was a shepherd or something. He was looking for one of his sheep or goats or something that had escaped. He was trying to get it before it got too dark and get back home. And I just came up behind him, and he couldn't hear me, he couldn't feel me, he couldn't see me because I was invisible. He couldn't do anything, but I know he was terrified, and that was my favorite. I loved him to be scared. I would stalk him, and you know, I kept stalking him, and that was my job. You know, I felt like it was my job because I'd like to, you know, find a person. I wanted to infiltrate their life, and I would start my, you know, process for what we consider like oppression, spiritual oppression. You know, I would scare him and try to push my thoughts into his head. And, you know, my goal was eventually to get him to let me take over his body completely. Because in that life, I was what you would consider a dark entity. I was a dark djinn. So in that's how I lived for a really long time, thousands of years. And that's how I fed. That's how I ate. And in that life, I didn't take a physical form. It's very difficult for demonic entities to take a physical form. We much rather travel as energy. So in that life, I traveled as red energy. And actually, I considered myself a parasitical entity because I traveled by the blood. I got into the bloodstream of people. That's why it's hard to find us. We're in the blood. So we travel like a virus, which is really interesting for, you know, people don't think that entities, you know, they always think of it as an external thing, but we're jumping around in the bloodstream.
Wow.
As a virus. So that was my job for a long time. And I was so, I don't know if it's out of touch, but in that life, I didn't even know what the word evil was. I just knew that this was what I was, who I was, and what I was supposed to do. And I literally thought that I was helping people, because it's like, we call it a heart call. If somebody calls out to, you know, one of us, they consider us like, you know, deities or things like that. They would call out to us to, you know, if they're having a hard time, there's rituals, there's all kinds of things. So we're like, we consider, you know, they just called me, they want me around, you know, they want me to take over and hurt them. Because so in that life, I thought I was doing good, because I said, they're calling me. I'm giving them the experience of darkness. I'm trying to help them, giving them what they want. So it was really interesting to see that duality within thinking that I was actually helping them, you know, even though I'm trying to take over their body and make them harm themselves or harm other people or completely obliterate their lives. That's what, you know, the end goal was, to, you know, destroy their lives. You know, I did that all the time. So that was another life that they saw that was like, for them, the most exciting. That was the most exciting for them. They wanted to take that and see what they could do with it, because in the work I've been doing, a lot of the work I've been doing, I know that in my experience, all the past lives that I have and will have, it's in my body at a cellular level. It's never going to be, you know, eliminated. So whatever, you know, I know a lot of people think that, you know, they say that they've been a good person in every life. And I think I am a good person. And now I look back and saw that, you know, what, I was a demon, a dark entity, you know, things that, you know, I would have never guessed, because up until, you know, I learned how to do this type of thing, I was terrified of everything. I was terrified of the world. I was terrified of dark, everything. Everything was so scary to me. And it's probably because, you know, I had so much, you know, repressed memory and repressed experiences that were just like, you know, there, and that I needed to see so I could deal with it firsthand. I just needed to see it. Right. So when they found all these lives, I'm sure they were like, holy shit, we can, you know, we can do so much with these types. You know, this is, if we take these lives and, you know, pull them forward into, you know, more of the front altars, you know, imagine what they could do if they had that power of like a dark entity coming through. You know, it's, you know, they could use it in different ways. So this programmer, this woman, she ended up referring me out to another gentleman to be evaluated somehow. And I didn't know what that meant. You know, I was just a kid. I was only seven. So they took me to this. It looked like, it didn't really look like a doctor's office. I want to say it more looked like a lawyer's office or something. It was an old man, an elderly man. And he was very thin at the time I saw him. This was like in the 70s, early 80s. Very thin, wire-rimmed glasses, bald, almost completely bald. He had just a small bit of hair. But why it's important is because his name was Dr. Green. And I don't know for sure, I because I only called him Dr. Green. I didn't know any other name. But a lot of people say that Dr. Green is another name for Mangala. So I'm not quite sure if that's – because I only called him Dr. Green.
Wow.
So when I was in his office,
I mean, as far as a name drop, that's a huge – huge revelation name drop there, because I mean, if our listeners don't know much about, you know, World War II history and the twisted things that Nazi scientists and doctors did, Mengele is about as bad as you can get.
Yeah, and they had a big hand in MK Ultra. They had a huge in MK Ultra. So it's not, to me, when I found that out, it wasn't completely out of the realm of possibility, because I'm right. Like, oh yeah, that makes sense, you know. But I'm not saying, I'm just saying I don't know for sure. I called him Dr. Green, but he was an elderly gentleman. By the time I met him when I was a kid, he was, I don't know, he looked like he was like 90. He was really old. But so I was in his office. He had these two twins there. I think they were twins. They had some type of like albino condition, not to be disrespectful, but they were very light colored, and their parents, and I couldn't really tell their age. I'm guessing late 20s or something, and probably trained assets themselves. I'm assuming, I'm not quite sure. But so they took me, and he told them to do their exam on me. So they start looking in my ears and my, you know, eyes, really weird things like that, looking in different areas. And they finally opened my mouth, and they were looking in there. They made me say, ah, and they said, yeah, they told Dr. Green, they said, yes, we can see the thing inside her. So what they thought they saw was an attachment, I think. I think they thought it was like a demonic attachment, or that I was possessed. They thought that's what it was. Okay. So this particular project that Dr. Green was working in is an occult project. It was called Project Traveler. And I know it sounds crazy, but these shadow agencies, they know that there is power to be found in some of the dark side. There's power behind it. Imagine the force behind the force, you know, and they want to kind of harness that, because, you know, these factions are always constantly fighting behind the scenes for power and control. Everything is done in the name of conquest and power. So it's not crazy to even think that they would even try something like this. You know, sure, it sounds outrageous, but, you know, depending on people's belief systems, if you've seen something, if you've known something, you know, there is power there in the dark side, and they wanted to harness that. So they thought, and they are targeting, you know, possessed children even today. They think that there's a way to, you know, use them and utilize these different abilities. So they started putting me in this project called Project Traveler, and it was like almost trying to use this dark entity that was inside me. But what they were wrong is, like I said, they thought I was an attachment, but it's not. What they were seeing was just me. Mm-hmm. On the inside of me is because I was a dark entity before. So that it's not something they could capture, they could harness, or eliminate, whatever they wanted to do with it. It wasn't possible, because they were just looking at just what I was in the past. You can't take that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's different from what they thought. So that was one way that they were wrong about everything in that way. But so I was going to jump around a little bit because I know we have there's so many different topics to go to. So when I got done with the MK Ultra, I went back.
How old were you at that time?
7.
Okay.
Oh, you're still wow. Wow. Yeah, this is.
When I got placed in Project Traveler, they're really excited about what they found because there's different projects because they're fine. There's another project that's like almost a sister project to this. They're looking for light beings. They're looking for reincarnated light beings. And then his project was he was looking for reincarnated dark beings, you know, just to see what you can do with it. And you can do a lot that we found, you know, especially being in these different programs. There's so much that you could do with this. You know, even now I utilize this all the time just in my work. I'm trying to obtain information. I can use that power that I had before. I feel like I can use some of that.
Wow.
So I remember one of the activities that they had me do at the psychiatric hospital when they wanted me to be in Project Traveler because they wanted to see what I could do. And you know what? They were trying to make this measurable. They were wanting to do experiments,
right,
you know, with this entity that was me to see what kind of measurements they could get. So they would have me do kind of like a sensory deprivation. So it wasn't anything with water or anything like that. It was just in a dark room. I would sit in a chair. They hooked me up to an IV. They put a blindfold on my eyes and I just had like a dirty nightgown, no food, no water, no nothing. They just set me in this dark room. And what they wanted to do is me to bring forth, open that portal that's inside me and bring forth, you know, things to this world. And I was able to do that for them. Even as a little kid, I was able to open something inside me. And that's how entities can kind of interact with me. And actually, I have an ability called hosting. And it's where I can open myself up and allow an entity or pretty much anything take over my body and speak or, you know, pretty much just interact with people. It can do anything. I do, you know, it's not unknown. I've done it quite a bit. So, yeah, when I did it,
a true medium, a true just being the channel for which those things come out. Wow. This is wild, amazing, fascinating stuff. And our listeners will know how into it we are because again, Barry and I hardly said anything. We're just so
Yeah, we're drawn into this story.
Yeah, this is so
it's amazing.
It is amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing. I think I always thought too, because of the amount of recall I got for it is crazy too, to be able to speak about it like this. But that's why I always want to tell people, you know, I talk about this so much. Just think about how difficult it would be for somebody like me to be consistent with this, the level of information I have. Imagine, just think about it and rationally think about, and if you're thinking about, oh, this is all fake, but I'm just saying, open mind and think about how difficult it would be for me to continue and be consistent with the same information over and over. It's extremely difficult. I would have to be a genius to pull this off.
Yeah, for sure.
So in this, when I was in this chair, like I said, they wanted me to do this hosting. And, you know, you think that when you're a little kid that, you know, I don't know. But when you go into that trance state, you are a multidimensional being. You're not just a 7-year-old child anymore. So something inside me, if I allow that portal to be opened, I'm a different, I'm not a 7-year-old anymore. It's a multidimensional, you know, aspect of me that's doing this. It's my, like my higher self, my, you know, all these different parts of me. So I let some entities take over my body and they would watch and, you know, and do a lot of body systems checks, you know, blood pressure, pulse. And they were trying to make it measurable to see when when these entities were in my body and taken over, what was going on, you know, physically to me, what was going on, you know, mentally, you know, that kind of thing. And I've always been conflicted about the fact that they didn't give me any food for days, you know, or water. And it literally, I felt like it was these entities that were inside me keeping me alive because they were sustaining me through this. And it's conflicting to see that humans were the ones torturing me. And then demons were keeping me alive. Right. Imagine how that impacts somebody's mind. Like, how, you know, I'm supposed to hate these things, you know,
right.
You know, by movies and everything say, hate, hate, hate. But then it's like they kept me alive and then the humans tortured me.
Yeah.
It's so conflicting to an experience. You know, I just have to try to be rational when I look at it and think about it, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, they're, you know, I mean, you're the host and a parasite wants the host to remain alive. You know, once the host, so that it can continue to be sustained by the energy of the host, by whatever it is that they draw from the host, nutrients or energy or whatever. And so in that way, you know, these dark things were protecting you from the, you know, they were, it was in a weird reversal role, like you said, of where, you know, the people should have been trying to protect you from the dark entities, but these were dark people. I mean, they were twisted. And
yes.
Again, you know, if this was Dr. Mengele, you know, I mean, again, with the Nazis have a very known recorded history of trying to combine occult practices and with,
yes,
science, and creating the, you know, kind of this, you know, I don't know what, I mean, techno mage kind of, this kind of you know, a combination of the two practices, and it's just, it's wild, and this is just fascinating. I'm just, yeah, really, really just gobsmacked. This is an incredible story.
Yeah. So, you know, when we're talking about how the word host is, a demon taught me that word. Cause I, you know, everybody says, well, you're just a channeler, you're just a medium. And I said, no, it's way more than that. I'm not, yeah, just that. I'm letting this thing take over my body, the whole thing, you know? So, yeah, if I stood up, that's a demon walking around. If I stood up with something inside me, if I was hosting, you can literally talk to a demon. Like, I can walk around and eat dinner with you as a, yeah, demonic presence. So it's more than just being a medium or a channeler. And so I know that part freaks people out, but it's just interesting, you know, especially being a, you know, a small woman and then being able to do this. And also I was going to say that when we're talking about, you know, the parasitical and how I was, you know, like that, and the demonics, they didn't say that, you know, they want to use me. It's because they said, I'm like them. I'm a kindred, mm-hmm, spirit, mm-hmm, to them. I'm not, and they never harm me. I've never been afraid. It's an ability I have because I never get harmed psychologically, physically, mentally. I can host an entity for 3 hours. And then as soon as it's done, I go make a sandwich. So
wow,
that's not,
wow,
something. Normal people can't do this. So,
well, yeah,
it's very interesting to be able to, you know, meet this and like figure this out and drop away so much fear that I had my entire life of everything. That fear dropped away because, you know, when I'm just having a different experience that anybody can have, and meeting some of these different energies and seeing like the duality within it. If them saying that, you know, they care that I'm a, you know, part of their tribe and then not harming me. So it's like I said, it's very conflicting. It's something that I always kind of like lingers in my mind, and you know, I still explore it all the time, just because I, you know, that's just the thing to do.
With the term host, it seems that there's a you have a willingness to or a choice in whether these things can come into you.
It is a choice. Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
And
wow.
I allow it. That's why I call hosting voluntary possession, because that's, wow, basically what it is. I'm allowing them to possess me. And that's the word that's why I say host instead of possess, because that's the word that's a little bit creepy. So, but like I said, it's, they've never harmed me and they never will. I don't have any fear of being harmed by one of these things, you know, especially, and even because I don't have fear when I go into a different state of consciousness, especially,
right,
when I'm getting ready to host, my consciousness shifts so deeply and expands so much. I have no fear. And I go into like a really, you know, sleek kind of like comforting place while I'm allowing this. I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not afraid of anything when I do that.
Is that a natural state, or is that part of the programming, a result of the programming, or is it a combination of the both?
I don't feel like it's a result of programming. I feel like it's a real ability because I use my higher, which is strange because people would assume that it's a dark power, but I use my higher self, which is the highest level of me, to do this. So that's something that also that people would have to be, you know, think about, that I'm using the highest level of myself, the good part, the best part that I can find to host a demon. So that's something that, you know, you wouldn't be able to people wouldn't be able to understand unless they were able to do it. It's very difficult to explain that I'm using a higher self. I'm not using a lower energy to do it, even though they're lower energies. But I don't feel like that. I don't, because I am one of them. I don't feel like they're lower energy. I feel like, you know, they're a race of beings, and they tell me that, you know, they're a race of beings just like, you know, just like an alien race would be considered, like, you know, the reptilians or the grays. Mm-hmm. They're, the djinn consider themselves a race of beings, and they actually have a very strict hierarchy in their world, and they take disrespect completely seriously. If I were to host a demon and it were to come through and start talking, if you started to be disrespectful, they would get really pissed off because they're saying, do you ask me to step into this world and treat me like shit when I get here? That's not going to go down with them. They every time that happens, they argue, because I've done it before. I've had somebody get mad and they argue and cuss and don't. And that's where a lot of that anger comes from, when you disrespect them, because these entities have been what a lot of people consider elder gods or deities. Right. Like even the djinn, we consider ourselves trickster gods, and not saying that we are gods. We know that we're not. It's just that's how we've been worshipped for so long as these, you know, lower gods things. We don't have any other word for it. And people worship them. They brought, you know, rituals and, you know, food and everything, sacrifices to these deities. So in them, they've been built up to think of themselves as gods.
Right.
So, but if you really, when I'm in a higher state and I talk to the higher state, I've talked to the higher self of a demon, and it talks about saying they know they're not gods. And that they, what really freaked me out is when they say they worship God too, and that they feel like they're the same, from the same place as everyone. If you speak to a different part of this thing, it's so interesting to be able to talk to different parts of not just, you know, the demonic realm, but aliens, animals, ghosts, like, and there's different parts of a person. Like I can even talk to like a human that's alive now. So if I wanted to talk to a different part of you, I could. I call that talking to someone's brain. That's an ability I have. And it's, you talk to different pieces of a person. Like there's the higher self. There's the front personality. There's hidden things in somebody's mind that you can talk to, hidden pieces. It's so complex. The mind and the spirit and the body of someone is so complex. There are so many different pieces that you can connect to when you're doing this.
Wow. That's so interesting.
Are these djinn, are they, these demons, are they, it's their race, are they an extra dimensional, is this another plane, or another dimension of existence, or are they on our plane of existence, just where that we are unable to perceive them?
That's what how I would picture it, as being like in a layer of our existence. Okay. Because like when I was a djinn, I could come up behind somebody and I could touch them, but they couldn't see me. So it's almost like that extra layer on top of whatever, like almost like a dimensional. I don't know if there's a word for it, but I can see that. So they have their own dimension, but it also can be pulled, you know, closer to this earth and other realms too. It's not like we just stalk people here. We can find, because I have talked to a lot of aliens and they have their own demons that they're afraid of. Like they have their own, like there's like a race called the dark reptilians, and they said that they want, their goal is to be the darkest thing possible. So they're like a demonic race for the reptilians, you know? So it's so interesting, you know, to be able and not to be afraid to even find this information.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a scary thought for something desiring to be the darkest entities, the darkest things ever, because you know, without being pure chaos, you know, they would, them having to be, wanting, the desire to be the darkest thing ever is just That's real scary. That's just fear. That's just fear, and
it's the duality, though. There's different sides, and it's all, to me, it's all, it all pulls into one, the two different sides, because I feel like that's, that wrestles inside me since I'm a good, I feel like a good person now, but I had that thing inside, so it's always going to be there. And I think a lot of people, if they explored, if they were able to explore, you could see some things that you would never expect. Like, I would have never expected to see that inside me, even though it makes a lot of sense now, you know, in terms of just, you know, paranormal experiences throughout my life and things. It makes sense. But at the time, it was like, I was like, holy, I was mind blown when I saw all this inside my own mind and experienced it and was doing it a lot. And I was just like, I just couldn't believe it, how interesting it was. I started, and this is what I found, is when a lot of the fear dropped away from these ideas, that's when these agencies had less control of me, when I stopped being afraid of it. Because that fear that we, you know, a lot of the fear I'd been programmed to have, you know, through religion, through movies, through books, just through the world of every fear of not only just this evil and these dark things, just everything. When that fear dropped away, they had less to control me with. They'll have fear, less to control the world with if we stop being afraid of, you know, thinking that something's going to take over your body. No, it's not, because they have to be invited in. No, it's not going to take over your body. You have to invite it in. I know that because I am one. I had to wait for them to invite me in. And so a lot of the entities, they told me that in the beginning, there was a barrier put up between their world and ours, and they can't travel freely without being invited. And they said, where do you think that vampire legend came from? It wasn't from vampires. They said it was from them, because they have to be invited into your space to take over your body. And trust me, a lot of people do invite this, or else they wouldn't be around still. Because if they weren't able to do this, they would die off.
Sure.
People do invite it all the time. So it's not an unknown thing. And, you know, it's just really, I just think it's interesting to, you know, see the, you know, this different side of it. To see a different side, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's, you know, the getting back to the Nazi program that they had, you know, there was a lot of occult things that were, you know, that Hitler was interested in. And so it makes
of the power.
It makes sense. Yeah, it's really
so much power in it.
Man, this is really fascinating.
Well, and obviously, I was going to start this in, is like, I mean, it's not just, you know, our own government has explored, you know, the esoteric, and we know that beyond like MK Ultra, but we've known about like how, you know, the men that stare at goats, you know, the whole trying to use the psychic projections and things like that during the Cold War, you know,
completely
we're always
possible. Possible. And that's actually very low level what they were exhibiting in that movie. That was the lowest level of abilities of what people can do. Like, I could do that on a regular day. Like, so they're trying to make it seem like it's nothing, like you can barely do this. No, there's so much you can do when you let your mind expand and when you open yourself up to it. You leave so much, like, I feel like I really leave the limits of my body behind when I open myself, like the portal up inside me. I'm leaving the limits behind. I was going to talk about something that was what happened to me more as an adult when they took the Project Traveler into adulthood. I just think it's interesting.
Sure.
Because, now we're just
how long,
age
like,
seven.
So. Yeah, right. So, how long were you in this program for? Like, your whole, like...
You're in with... Once they own you, you're in for a long time.
Okay.
They own you. So, at the psychiatric hospital, I want to say that's... They consider that, like, training, so I want to say 6 months. Okay. But I did... Probably up until, so this is really strange, it overlaps, and this is really hard. So when you get taken to an off planet experience, you do 20 years off planet, they age you, age regress you and push you back, and they use chemicals to push you back to a different age. So it's like you never left, but in the inside, which is really strange, a lot of us have health issues because you're pretty much, your organs are rotting because you're a lot older than what you seem on the outside. Wow. You look young on the outside and your insides are rotting. So a lot of people have like organ issues even at a very early age because of all the chemicals they give us, you know, all the, you know, like I said, LSD and all that given to you mm-hmm. as children. Your liver's, I have a my liver's, I've almost died from that.
Wow.
So it's really interesting to have that, you know, backup. You know, when you have a liver issue at a very young age for no reason.
Sure.
That's really interesting to think of. But I was going to say that as an adult, what's something they wanted to do with this hosting ability as an adult is there was an agency that they sold me to called Monarch Solutions. And this Monarch Solutions, they had pretty much like a catalog of services. And some of the services were occult services. So were these what we consider like elites or people in power, some mm-hmm. of these families that have very wealthy families, they were, you know, utilizing some of these services. And there was one particular family, I'm just going to talk about them. They had their attorney, you know, purchase, you know, me for like a weekend. And I didn't get treated badly. You know, it was fine. This is one time I didn't get treated badly. So you just go there and, you know, you go to this house. There was another gentleman there that had the same ability as me. So it's not just me. So he was just, you know, they have us relax. They give us food and everything. And what they're planning to do is they want me to host for them because this particular family, they had met. What they're trying to do is have interactions with their personal God. Like they call it a daemon. They don't really say demon. They say mm-hmm. daemon. Mm-hmm. So they said they wanted to interact with their personal daemon. And they had found this particular daemon way back in the 1500s. So it's a generational familiar spirit. It has come down the line with them. So that's why they've continued these rituals, because somebody, one of their relatives, ancestors in the 1500s found this connection through their own abilities. And, you know, this family thinks that that's how they maintain their power and their wealth is through their connection with this particular entity called Bacchus. So this, okay. they've created like a cult around this particular entity. So they worship him, and, you know, probably like once a year they hire somebody to do hosting so they can bring their God down to this earth. So they had us, you know, lay down and pretty much just do – they did like a minor ritual. It wasn't anything like you would see in a movie, nothing. They were just dressed normally. It wasn't like you would think there was no robes or anything like that, no blood drinking. Because really people think you need a ritual to call the demonic. You don't. You can do it anytime, and you pretty much just need a host, like somebody like me that could do that. It's not even a lot of energy expulsion to do this thing. So I would just lay down and let the portal open inside me, and they wanted Bacchus to come in, and he would. But the thing is that it was always like they didn't look like they were happy with what came through. Because once Bacchus was in my body, I tried to stand up, and it felt like each of my legs was 100 pounds. I could barely walk. And I walked over to the table, and they wanted to have dinner with their God. So I sat at the table, but it's not like I ate with a knife and fork. I ate like an animal because I don't get to be in a human body all the time. I just started, you know, Bacchus started ripping and tearing, rah, rah, you know, eating like a disgusting animal. And they just like kind of stared at me eating with their mouths open. And then they wanted to ask him questions, and he was really pissed off. Because he said how dare you call a God down here for parlor tricks kind of thing. They were treating him like he was like a two-bit psychic, like asking him if her husband was cheating on her, if, you know, how can we, you know, improve our business? And, you know, he was super angry. He's like, you just called a God down here for nonsense, pretty much. How right. dare you, you know?
Right.
He's one that gets really pissed off when people disrespect him. He took that as very, very much disrespect. Mm-hmm. So they were doing things like that. And that's what, just so people can eat with their God and, you know, have interactions with their God. And they're also trying to have relations with some of these entities. So think about it. If you consider something your God and it can come down here, they want to have a physical relationship with that God.
Right.
And so in their minds, some of these elites or families, some people call them, you know, we've heard different words, Illuminati and all that. I don't know. I don't know what they actually call themselves. I just know that they're a family. If one of us hosts were to take an entity into our bodies, and then somebody were to have relations with a host, and what if that host either got someone pregnant or became pregnant? They consider that child to be like a child of the moon. They consider that a demonic bloodline because that's birthed by, you know, the entity. That's really creepy what these people are trying to bring forth. Like they said, they're trying to bring forth an army of Antichrist, like that, like bringing the demonic bloodline through in humans by hosting and having relations with their God while it's here in this dimension.
Wow.
I've heard the term of the moon child of her and of this kind of, you know, this kind of story before. And yeah, I've heard about these kinds of things.
And, and Bacchus, Bacchus even, he thinks of me as his child because he said that he felt like he took my father's body over when they conceived me. He felt like he considers me his daughter and it's crazy to think that something, but you know what? He wasn't always considered a demonic entity. Bacchus is another name for Dionysus.
Right.
He was a deity worshipped in different cultures. He wasn't worshipped as like a demon or anything. He was, you know, a god of wine.
Yeah. And parties times and
when people say that, it's really hard to believe because I don't, when his energy is not like a party person at all. He's very strict and stern, almost like a kind of like grumpy grandfather in my opinion. I don't see him as like a party animal, you know, and he gets really upset when people, you know, want to come and party and, you know, have relations with him and things like that. It's just not his style.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that they've turned him into kind of his, you know, persona into like a demon when he used to be considered like a god of wine. So, you know, if I ever have any trouble, because I do a lot of these like sessions and because I'm trying to get more information for the world pretty much. So I'm doing a lot of sessions. And if I ever have any issue with any other entity, and you know, from time to time I'll have, and it's usually not a demon that gives me a problem. It's usually a ghost, like an angry spirit.
Mm-hmm.
They'll kind of, and there was one time a succubus tried to choke me. But she was, this is really, really weird. She was jealous of somebody that I was dating. She wanted to, you know, she liked him. So it was something that he had attached to him, this succubus. And she, to me, a succubus kind of reminds me more of like a very strong, like dark spirit. I don't really get like a demon vibe from it. I don't feel like overwhelmed by her energy or anything. But she tried to choke me. And I was kind of like, you know, I kind of like called for help. And I heard this noise when I was under, you know, under trance. I heard this noise. It sounded like 1,000 bulls running towards me. And it was Bacchus. He came in the form of a bull towards this thing, this succubus. Like he came, you know, you call out and you think like an angel's going to come or something. And it was him in the form of a bull, you know, pretty much like, how dare you try to attack my dog.
Right. Yeah.
It came like a bull. I've never even, that was the craziest thing. Like, and I heard it like sounded like 1,000 bulls running towards me.
Wow.
It's so interesting that he came running. All I did was say, help, you know, somebody was choking me. So succubus.
Wow. So when you're in a state like that, when you're hosting,
yes,
you are conscious also, like,
yes.
Okay,
I can, it's almost like being in the deepest trance possible.
Okay,
but at the same time being completely conscious. I can move around, I can even open my eyes, I can get up and go to the bathroom and come back and still be in that state.
Wow.
It's definitely an ability that, you know, a lot of people don't have, you know.
Sure.
So I do it all the time. I that's just how I've gotten so much information. And you know, I would hate to let go of it, you know, now that I have it. It would be like, it'd be such a tragedy not to be able to do it. Like, I just know that I can do it every time. You know, I wouldn't know what it feels like to not be able to, you know, reach that state.
Sure. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, wow. This has just been just incredible. And I think, obviously, you've got a lot more. We're definitely going to have you come back on with this because this has just been. To.
Yes, please. Yeah.
Wow. I haven't even gotten to. We barely got out of the 7-year-old stage.
Yeah.
Right around age 13, I went to the moon for training. So I should stop there and then, you know, in the next show, we can talk about the training I did. Personality profiling training on the moon at 13. So we'll talk about that next time. And then also when I got transferred to Mars and worked in their corporate sector.
Wow. Wow.
Sorry, Mars corporate just sounds funny to me, but that is fantastic.
Yeah.
That is
awesome.
Yeah,
they had me doing a lot of work for them under Mars Defense Force. And the base on Mars that I worked at was called Mercury Base in the South Canal region. Okay. I was under Division Mariner of Mars Defense Force. It was a ground force battalion, but they had me in the corporate sector because I got a promotion. Okay, I'll say that. I won't keep going.
Great.
Okay. All right. Well, but to tantalize us further, to tell us, I know you got a couple of books out. Yeah. And so
yes.
What are they called? How can people find them?
So that they can go Amazon. Ahead. It's the Gray Mouse series. And the first book is called Gray Mouse, Sex, Space, and Mind Control. And the second book is called Gray Mouse Purgatory. Okay. First book is a lot of like the origin story. There's so much information about how I started and how it happened and how I created the altars. And the second book is a lot about actually the theme of it is duality and how I experience duality using my abilities. So in those books, in the second book, it's definitely information straight from, you know, spirits, aliens, demons, religious figures, everything that I could let take over my body is speaking directly. It's word for word in there. So it's really interesting.
Cool. Wow.
Wow. Wow. Awesome. Awesome.
Okay. So that's the Gray Mouse series by Olivia James. And any social media? Do you have any kind of social media presence?
TikTok, please. Twitter X, Instagram, Facebook, all of them.
Okay.
YouTube. Stop by all of them. I do a lot of I make a lot of videos with the information from my books and any new information that I obtain. I make videos and I put it on TikTok and then pretty much all my social media. So you can find all additional information there. If reading isn't your type of thing, then you can also watch the videos.
Cool.
And so what is your what are you on Instagram? I'm going to go ahead and follow you right now.
Olivia James Gray Mouse.
Okay, cool. Awesome. This has been...
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the most incredible stories we've heard. And just, I'm excited to hear more.
For sure.
Yeah, we've got lots more. We've got lots more to go over.
Fantastic. Cool. Okay, great. That's awesome. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it again. Thank you for hanging out with us and talking. And this is going to be a good one for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so
absolutely.
Much.
Absolutely. And I guess we got dark, but you know, I mean, I don't think it was necessarily even shocking dark, but again, maybe that's because, you know, the people we've talked to and what we've experienced and all of that and our own, you know, background and this kind of stuff. But man, yeah, I'm excited. Thank you so much, Olivia, for reaching out to us. Thank you. Get this. We call it What's Your Weird Story, right? But we don't limit it to weird stories. It's true. Sometimes we have crazy travel and epic adventure stories. Sometimes we do book reports and other special episodes. Sometimes we'll cover some weird news. Sometimes I'll see one of my oldest, dearest friends just dancing around and punching the air for 5 minutes before we sit down and record an episode. But hey, it's all good because it's fun to talk to people, to make new friends, to get in touch and reacquainted with old friends and hear amazing stories.
Olivia, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. And it was it's something, the subject of MK Ultra is something that we've talked about, but this is more, it's deeper. Of course, her stories about the, you know, her father being involved and her mother being involved in the cartel. And I mean, it's just, it's an amazing story.
Yeah, dude, it checks so many of our favorite boxes. I mean, we love hearing about MK Ultra. I mean, obviously, it's not a good thing to hear about when people have been subjugated to it. But we love hearing about those kind of shadow or government shady organizations, you know, the triple letter groups that she talks about and calls them, and about what the programs that we don't know about, we don't hear about. we love hearing about that. You know, we're not, and not necessarily as a, you know, calling it a conspiracy theory or anything like that, because we know that there were these types of programs for sure historically.
Right.
That we know that they were messing with people's minds and trying to create, use drugs and psychology on people to make soldiers and assassins and like that. We know that. That's history. You know, that's MK Ultra program and just, you know, some of the other wild things and more wild things to come.
Yeah,
for sure. Like I've heard, you know, she was talking about the hosting and the moon children, the child of the moon, and that's, I've read about that in various places, you know.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, like I mean, it's just one of those things you jump around in interest in the esoteric, and you start picking up on all of these little things, and you know there are these words that you're just like, oh, okay, and these things can be drawn together with strings that you're like, okay, yeah, and you know, I don't know, is that a conspiracy or theory, or is it just like a web, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's all those things, like, you know, she's talked about Joseph Mengele and MK Ultra and the you know, past lives and multiple alters, you know, personalities being created and stored inside of her, and it sounds all like, you know, how are these things connected? And they are connected, and it's just, it's wild. It's a web. It's an incredible web of story that her life has been woven together outside of her control.
Absolutely. I can't wait to expand upon the web and see what else is in store. This has been really, really great. Thanks again, Olivia. You've been just a pleasure to talk to.
Yeah. This has been a hell of a way to kick off the new year, I'll tell you what.
Absolutely.
Man. Yeah. So please join us again next week when Olivia is back to give us more of her story. We are getting into, just even more stuff. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
In that it is just incredible. And it's wow. It's wow.
For sure.
So let's keep rolling in the wow for 2025. Feeling alive in 2025 or whatever. Something, let's hope. Let's keep it going. Keep all positive mental energy and vibes and all of that. And try to, you know, achieve and prosper and all of that good stuff.
Absolutely.
And keep rolling into 2025. And, you know, again, we hope that you made some resolutions, and that the main resolution is that you're going to contact us and join us here in Weirdsville and share your stories.
Absolutely. I
mean, they don't have to be, you know, epics like Olivia's.
Right.
They can be a short story just about like something funny that happened to you.
Absolutely.
You know, just like a 5-minute story. Hey, that's cool. We'll put it together with other stuff and we'll make a jigsaw of short stories. We love that. We haven't done it in a while. We love doing that. You can write your story in if you don't want to tell it. It's always an option. Send it to us through our social media accounts or through our email, wywspod@gmail.com. You can call our phone number. It's free, toll free. You can leave a message. You can leave multiple messages, but you can leave it up to 3 minutes long. So that hotline number is 513-909-9821. And there's all sorts of ways to get a hold of us, and we would love to get a hold of you. We would love to talk to you, hear your stories, and short or long. Wild and epic, or short and hilarious, or, you know, hard to believe, hard to explain. I should say hard to explain rather than hard to believe. But then, you know, who knows? That's up for you to decide.
Right. Everybody's got their own interpretation.
That's right. And all we are here to do is listen and laugh and love and enjoy each other's company for the time that we're here here on Earth and here in the Weirdsville studios. So once again, Happy New Year 2025. Have a kick-ass year. We will see you next week with more of Olivia and her incredible stories. And until then, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.